It's Thursday, March 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, U.S. voters have all but selected presumptive presidential nominees. In another political battle, a nominee has been announced for the Supreme Court.
It's not really about actually releasing an American hostage here. It's about the appearance of a senior American official visiting North Korea.
The next phase begins following the sentencing of an American student in North Korea. Also ahead, a young Canadian singer is attracting a lot of new fans. It's all on today's International Edition. Let's get right to business. We know you want to know who is the leader in the presidential race here in the United States. New York businessman Donald Trump won three straight state presidential primary election contests that were held late Tuesday, bumping Republican Senator Marco Rubio out of the 2016 race for the White House, taking Rubio's home state of Florida, as well as North Carolina and Illinois. But Trump lost Ohio to the incumbent state governor, John Kasich. Trump called it an amazing evening and already sounded like the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party in preaching unity.
We have to bring our party together. We have to bring it together. We have something happening that actually makes the Republican Party probably the biggest political story anywhere in the world. Everybody's writing about it, all over Europe, all over the world they're talking about it. Millions of people are coming in to vote. We have a great opportunity, and the people that are voting are Democrats are coming in, independents are coming in, and very, very importantly, people that never voted before. It's an incredible thing.
Earlier, Trump won the election in the Pacific Territory of the Northern Marianas, bringing him to 621 of the 1,237 delegates that he needs to secure the Republican Party's nomination. On the Democratic side, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton took a huge step towards securing her party's nomination against her lone rival, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
Well, I'll tell you. This is another Super Tuesday for our campaign. Thank you, Florida. Thank you, North Carolina. Thank you, Ohio. You know, tonight it's clearer than ever that this may be one of the most consequential campaigns of our lifetimes. The next president will walk into the Oval Office next January, sit down at that desk, and start making decisions that will affect the lives and the livelihoods of everyone in this country, indeed, everyone on this planet.
Clinton may sound like she's losing her voice, but she won the Illinois primary, giving her an almost insurmountable delegate lead of 1,561 out of the 2,383 she needs, following an embarrassing loss to Sanders in Michigan last week. VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone joins us for more perspective. Jim, a really big night for Donald Trump in the Republican race.
He did indeed. He did not win in Ohio, and the significance there is not only does John Kasich get to stay in the race. He may be able to rally the Republican establishment around him now. He may try to get some of the Rubio supporters with him. But it also keeps open at least the possibility that Donald Trump, is doing well as he is, may not get the delegates he needs before the convention to have the nomination sewn up before the convention in Cleveland in July. That leaves open a sliver of a possibility that somehow he could be denied the nomination by what's called a contested convention. But it still looks like a long shot.
That could be quite interesting. And, of course, Texas Senator Ted Cruz in the thick of that with Donald Trump.
Right. And Ted Cruz now says he's the only one who's beaten Trump enough to be considered his chief rival. Look, it is a three-person race now with Kasich and Trump. Trump's well ahead. He's going to continue to gain delegates. And if he can win some of the upcoming states like Arizona with winner-take-all, it's going to reinforce the idea that even though he may not get to the convention with all the votes he needs, he's going to have most of them, and it's really going to be difficult for the party to kind of turn away from him at the last minute.
Now, among the Democrats, of course, it's been down to two, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders pulled out a win.
Yeah, Bernie Sanders looking narrowly good in Missouri at the moment. But you know what? That's the silver lining and otherwise a pretty dark cloud for Bernie Sanders. Hillary Clinton thrashed him in Florida, easily won in North Carolina, and had a big win in Ohio. I actually think the Clinton win in Ohio is nearly decisive. It shows that she's winning in these bigger states. Sanders will remain in the race. He can continue to accrue delegates. But here's the problem. He would have to win by 60% or almost 70% of the remaining delegates to overtake her, and that's just not very likely. So I actually think that this primary night was a decisively good night for Hillary Clinton. It doesn't mean she's going to be able to flush him out of the race anytime soon, but she has a huge lead in delegates.
So at the moment, it appears like we have really a two-person race coming down to the conventions. It's going to be Hillary Clinton for the Democrats and probably Donald Trump.
And she was already focused on Trump in her victory remarks tonight, talking about the politics of fear, as was Marco Rubio. So the Trump narrative continues to drive the race, but he hasn't quite sewn up the nomination yet.
Jim Lohn, thank you so much for that. The next fight for delegates in both parties is centered in the West, with contests March 22nd in Arizona, Idaho, and Utah. We turn now to our social media segment. G. Abby Lee joins me in the studio to tell us what's buzzing online. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
Let's begin with President Obama's Supreme Court nomination, which occurred today.
Mm-hmm, that did. The White House and Twitter at White House shared a video clip of President Obama making the announcement Wednesday, and along with the video, it tweeted, "I have fulfilled my constitutional duty. Now it's time for the Senate to do theirs." At POTUS, hashtag SCOTUS nominee. Now for our international listeners, SCOTUS means the Supreme Court of the United States. Hashtag SCOTUS nominee is actually a trending hashtag at this hour, but the nominee himself, federal judge Merrick Garland, isn't on it.
Well, be sure to stay tuned because we'll have much more on this nomination. Staying with domestic politics, Fox News canceled the upcoming GOP debate just a couple of hours ago. Are the Republican contenders writing about this online?
They are. First, it was the GOP frontrunner Donald Trump who tweeted, "I'm making a big speech the night of the Fox News debate, but I wish everyone well. Yesterday was a big day for me with 5 wins." And then Ohio Governor John Kasich said he's not going to attend without Trump. And that really upset Ted Cruz, who is the only other GOP contender. He wrote on Facebook, hashtag ducking Donald, referring to the GOP frontrunner, strikes again. Tell Donald J. Trump to debate.
I see. So what's trending outside of the United States?
One big international news is from the Vatican. Pope Francis reportedly fired the church's ambassador to the U.S. over his meeting with Kim Davis last year. Now, the Vatican ambassador is widely known for his anti-gay stance, and Davis, as many of our listeners probably already know, is a county clerk in Kentucky who refused to issue marriage licenses to gay and lesbian couples. That's all for me today. Jim?
Well, thanks for that great Twitter wrap-up, G. She's on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there at VOA Stevenson, and you can follow our program's account at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. As we mentioned a couple moments ago, U.S. President Barack Obama has named a nominee to replace the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia.
Today I am nominating Chief Judge Merrick Brian Garland to join the Supreme Court.
We have been reporting for weeks since the death of Antonin Scalia about the verbal battle between the White House and the Republican-controlled Senate, which is tasked with considering any Supreme Court nomination and ultimately confirming or denying the candidate a seat on the court's highest bench. International Edition host Susan Yockey spoke with VOA's Catherine Gibson, who was at the White House and in the Rose Garden for the announcement, and who tells us much more about Federal Appeals Court Judge Merrick Garland.
A lot of people are saying that Garland is the safe choice, but President Obama is really looking at this as a way to rise above the petty politics of this moment, and that's what he said, and really give a choice that is unimpeachable in terms of his background and qualifications and personality. And he certainly hopes that he'll be able to push that nominee through the Senate.
Well, who is Merrick Garland? What do we know about him?
We know that he actually left a lucrative law practice to go back into public service. We know that he has a personal interest in mentoring youth here in the D.C. area, and he's dealt with a lot of national security cases while he's been on the D.C. circuit. So he certainly has the experience and the personal background to serve as a Supreme Court nominee. We'll see if he gets through and serves on the court.
Do we know if he has any personal relationship with the president?
He didn't mention that in the Rose Garden ceremony. He did mention that he was honored to be nominated by a fellow Chicagoan. So that was a moment of levity in the Rose Garden when he said that. And he was very emotional, too, speaking about the history of his family coming to this country and the values of hard work and character that they had instilled in him.
Some members of the U.S. Senate who have to confirm the president's choice are saying that they're not going to consider anyone until after the next presidential election. What is the feeling about all that at the White House?
Well, I think with this nomination today, the president was hoping that he could put forward a nominee that would be very difficult for Senate Republicans to object to. Someone who's already been through the confirmation process, who's respected on both sides of the aisle, and who doesn't really have much in his background so far that I'm hearing about that can be pointed at to as a reason to deny his nomination. So I think the president took a very safe choice in terms of getting that nomination through.
Why didn't you choose some of the other nominees? Did they let you know that?
You know, we're not hearing about that right now at the White House. What we are hearing is that Garland is the nominee who is respected on both sides of the aisle. And that spirit of bipartisanship is really something I think the president is hoping to summon as we move forward in this very difficult process.
VOA's Catherine Gibson, who was at the White House for President Obama's Supreme Court nomination announcement. North Korea has sentenced an American university student to 15 years hard labor for subversion after he publicly confessed to trying to steal a propaganda banner from a hotel. 21-year-old University of Virginia student Otto Warmbier, under arrest since January, was convicted and sentenced Wednesday in a one-hour trial before North Korea's Supreme Court. According to the New York Times, former New Mexico governor and veteran diplomat Bill Richardson met Tuesday with two North Korean UN diplomats to press for Warmbier's release. Richardson said that the diplomats promised him they would convey the request. Richardson has been involved in gaining the freedom of other detained Americans in North Korea. The sentence comes at a time of heightened tensions over tough new UN sanctions. That following the North's latest nuclear test in January and a rocket launch in February, both of those banned activities under previous sanctions. Go Myung-hyun, a research fellow at the Seoul-based Asian Institute for Policy Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty that he was not surprised.
There are precedents to this kind of hostage diplomacy conducted by North Korea. If you remember, former President Carter and former President Clinton had to visit North Korea to rescue American citizens who were being held in North Korea against their will. So I think it's a repeat of the same pattern we have seen before.
Do you think the North, by taking this action, is expecting some senior American official to come to North Korea pleading for his release?
That's correct. That's the only way North Korea can bring a senior American official to North Korea. So what really matters here is not about the content or substance going on. It's not really about actually releasing an American hostage here. It's about the appearance of a senior American official visiting North Korea and maybe even actually meeting, depending on the status and the level of the senior American official, right? But then what matters to the North Korean regime is holding meeting appearance of having a meeting with a senior American official to be used as probably as a domestic propaganda.
And would you think this senior American official, whoever it may turn out to be, North Korea wants to speak with that person about current tensions?
North Korea will try to, but I don't think they really care about that much because they understand that there are other communication channels to hold discussions about the current tensions in the Korean Peninsula besides having a face-to-face meeting in Pyongyang. For instance, they can just email a State Department official if they want to have a meeting to have a discussion about substantial issues about the Korean Peninsula. So there's a need for that. That's the reason why I believe North Koreans are going to use this occasion as a way to showcase how North Korean regime is capable of calling in any senior level of North American official to Pyongyang.
The New York Times reports that former Governor Bill Richardson, who was an envoy at one time to North Korea, met with the North's ambassador to the UN on Tuesday to press for the release of this young man. Mm-hmm. He said he urged the humanitarian release of Otto Warmbier, and they agreed to convey the request. Do you think Mr. Richardson might be a likely candidate to come to North Korea?
Yeah, he's been to North Korea several times for the same mission. But then what I'm afraid of is that North Korea might be looking for a fresh face in this occasion, maybe even like a higher-ranking official.
Go Myung-hyun says that given past experience, he does not expect Warmbier to serve out his full 15 years or even experience the kind of harsh incarceration reserved for North Koreans. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
Canadian singer Alessia Cara is finding a lot of success this year. International Edition's Ira Melman and VOA Music's Larry London get together to talk about why she's so popular.
Larry London is here, host of Border Crossings on VOA, and he is highlighting, throwing the spotlight on a young singer from north of our border here in the United States. Larry?
That's right. Alessia Cara is her name. She's from Brampton, Ontario, Canada. At the tender age of 19, she scored her very first hit last year in 2015 with the song Here, which is off of her debut album Know It All. And what teenager doesn't think they know it all? Now, Alessia has been posting videos on YouTube since she was 13, another singer-songwriter who became famous through social media. And she got signed to a contract. She performed her song Here on stage with Taylor Swift. She said that was the aha moment for her, joining Taylor Swift during the 1989 tour at Taylor's invitation in front of 50,000 people who all knew the lyrics to the song Here. Well, now she's back with her second single.
And I just want to go back for a second because this is not the first time Taylor Swift has done something like this, right?
That's right. Taylor, on her 1989 tour, was inviting all kinds of guests, people from talk shows like Ellen to sports celebrities like Derek Jeter to many, many different singers as well. And Alessia Cara was one of the lucky ones who got invited to perform at one of Taylor's shows. And she said that's the highlight of her career so far.
If you were to pin her down to a certain kind of style, how would you describe it?
She is a pop rock kind of singer. She's gritty. She's much like a Bonnie Raitt or a Bonnie Tyler in that style and that sound. I like her lyrics. They're very real. They're very refreshing. The song Here was inspired by a party she attended with a bunch of friends, one of those parties we've all been at, which just was kind of like boring and dull, and why are we here?
That's at least the ones we want to talk about.
That's the ones we throw. But now she's got a great thing out, which is called Wild Things, which is totally opposite of a dull and boring party.
Is it the same kind of style as the first one was?
It's different, but it's still Alicia Cara. It's still, you know, a raspy, gritty style of singing that she has. And at 19, she's well on her way. She's going to have a bright career. And this album's very exciting. I've heard the album. I really like the album, Know It All.
Doesn't it surprise you, or doesn't it amaze you, I should say anyway, that somebody who's 19 years old can have the insight to come up with good lyrics?
And you know what? If you watch these reality music shows, you're finding that more and more of these tremendously talented people are young, like on the current season of American Idol. They have 4 or 5 15-year-old contestants, which is just amazing how these people, I mean, when I was 15, I didn't know what end was up. So, you know, these people are so talented, and she's receiving all kinds of nominations for awards. Show. She's up for several Juno Awards. She's up for Radio Disney Music Award and a Kids Choice Award for Favorite New Artist. So she's hot on the scene right now. She's definitely somebody to watch.
More power to her. And Larry London, once again, as always, we thank you.
Thank you, Ira.
You've been listening to A Little Bit of Alicia Cara and International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com. We're also on Twitter. Follow us at @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Dan Crafton. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We thank you so much for joining us. Come back when you can and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Deputy Secretary of Energy Elizabeth Sherwood Randall and Vice Minister for Foreign Affairs for the Republic of Korea, Cho Tae-yul, announced on March 3rd the launch of the High-Level Bilateral Commission, the HLBC. In their roles as co-chairs, Deputy Secretary Sherwood Randall and Vice Minister Cho also announced that the first meeting of the HLBC will take place in Seoul on April 14th. Deputy Secretary Sherwood Randall will travel to Seoul to co-chair the HLBC as part of a trip focused on nuclear security, safety, nonproliferation, and clean energy. Established pursuant to the terms of the Agreement for Cooperation between the United States of America and the Republic of Korea concerning peaceful uses of nuclear energy, often referred to as the US-ROK 123 Agreement, the HLBC will serve as a senior-level forum to facilitate strategic dialogue and technical exchanges on peaceful nuclear cooperation between the two countries. In particular, the HLBC will examine the management of spent nuclear fuel, the promotion of nuclear exports and export control cooperation, assurances of nuclear fuel supply, and nuclear security. Upon announcement of the HLBC, Deputy Secretary of Energy Sherwood Randall said, "The United States and the Republic of Korea share over 30 years of close cooperation on civil nuclear energy. The creation of the HLBC reaffirms our nation's deep commitment to our joint efforts on nuclear safety and builds on our history of mutually beneficial collaboration in this area." Deputy Secretary Sherwood Randall's and Vice President Cho's meeting established the structure and functions of the 4 working groups established in the 123 Agreement and confirmed the group's membership. The first official task for the working groups is to develop terms of reference and work plans that will be presented to the HLBC co-chairs for approval at their April meeting. The United States is proud to work with its partner, the Republic of Korea, to ensure the peaceful and safe use of nuclear energy for the benefit of the people of the ROK, the Korean Peninsula, and the East Asia and Pacific region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.